And if they hear the baby,
an interview with A.Z. Young. Could you give me your name and address, please?
Name A.Z. Young, 1112 East End Street, Bolus, Louisiana.
How old are you, and how many children do you have, and how old are they?
I'm 44. My daughter is 19 years old. Father, one child.
Thank you. Could you tell me a little bit about how you got involved in the movement? Go back as far as you want to.
I got involved in the movement when they say, here's the baby. I've been involved in the movement all my life.
Could you tell us a little more about that? What kinds of things were you doing before the movement really got started in Bogalusa?
At one point, I was the president of a labor union at the Crown Zellerbach operation in Bogalusa for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that was a great deal of obstacles in trying to bring about a change in the community as far as labor production is concerned. I had a chance to negotiate and plus travel around to various other cities and states, negotiating different contracts and find information about the labor unions. And this gave me a bit of experience as to what Negroes needed in order to cope with the previous situation.
The labor unions at Crown Zellerbach are segregated, aren't they?
Totally segregated.
Are you doing anything to try to get them integrated?
During my time as president of the labor union, I wrote a letter to the international headquarters for the labor unions, stating that the labor union, which I represent, was ready to merge and to surrender our charter to the large organization, which was the all-white organization, and to merge at the unions and so we could merge the line of progressions. This was under the regime of John P. Burke. This did not materialize, and never did we receive a letter pertaining to this until a few years later.
Wasn't there some kind of court case involved with the union, where the white local had gone out on strike and the Negro local refused to, or something like that?
Yes, the white local at the 189 at the Papermakers Union and the 189A, which is a Negro union, went out on strike. The Negro voted not to strike, and the white voted to strike. But however, the International Union carried the entire paper mill out on strike because the majority of peoples are in the local union, which is a all-white labor union.
Mm-hmm. Whatever came of that whole thing?
Well, the Negroes were denied their rights to get Social Security or either unemployment. And they just lost all the way around, the Negroes did, and forced out on a strike.
Uh-huh. Have you been able to make much progress recently with Crown Zellerbach and getting Negroes jobs at a higher level and getting Negroes into the line of progression?
I don't think that there have been a tremendous amount of progress made in the Crown Zellerbach operation. Negroes still are at the lowest level, and there are no Negroes in the supervisory capacity even at this time.
What are you doing about that?
We have a court case now in session, a case presented by Vice President Hicks, trying to bring about this change through a federal order, hoping that the courts will see it fit to move Negroes in a higher bracket.
Yeah. And do you think you'll win?
It all depends on how liberal the judge might be. Naturally,
that's a problem.
That is very much so.
Yeah, some of these judges, you can't always tell what they're going to decide.
No, we're hoping that this judge is somewhat liberal and will lean in the direction of Mr. Hicks' suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, now could you tell a little bit about the Bogalusa Voters League and how the movement here got started?
The movement was started under the Moses administration. Andrew Moses was president, with McClure Sampson as his vice president.
When was that?
64. This was 1964.
Uh-huh. And what did the Voters League do? What kinds of things did it do?
This organization was formed in order for voters' registration. in order to hold a Negro organization intact, to inform the people about what was taking place in the community and what was necessary for them to do, in order to educate our people in the right direction, where they would be able to cope with the present situation.
Did it have much success?
Under a segregated condition, the organization worked fine until the Negroes in this community decided to state their position. And then naturally a change came.
What was the business about the biracial committee? That wasn't the League involved with the biracial committee?
Yes, the League had a biracial committee, a hand-picked biracial committee, which was controlled by the city council with very little power. The power was limited, and not too much came from the biracial committee due to the fact that Negroes hadn't staked what they truly believed in and what they truly wanted.
And how did it come about that Negroes did start to state what they truly wanted?
It was Cora who came in to Bogalusa trying to see if the Bogalusa Voter League would accept them in the community and help them work out a program in order to bring about this change. Now, in the beginning, the organization denied Cora the opportunity to come into Bogalusa. This, however, made a bad image in the light of the Negro leadership. And it was later when Congressman Brooks Hayes came here to speak at an integrated rally and was denied the opportunity. And when this opportunity was denied, Brooks Hayes went back to Washington and released this information, which destroyed the image of the Bogalusa situation. Then at this point, the mayor and his council thought that it was smart to call in CORE in order to start demonstration as far as testing accommodation to make the outside world believe that Bogalusa was still coming along and was complying with the federal order. And when bringing in CORE organization, after the one-day trial test, they asked CORE to leave Bogalusa. And the organization says no. And this is where the struggle begins.
Yeah, as I remember, Ronnie Moore wrote a letter to the mayor of Bogalusa, along with the mayors of all the other cities in Louisiana, saying that if the mayor didn't comply with the Civil Rights Act, that CORE would come in. Now, could you describe what happened after that? How the people were sent to Plaquemine?
I'm not too familiar with the Plaquemine situation, but I do recall the CORE coming into Bogalusa. And they came into Bogalusa, the mayor had them for one-day trial. And after the trial test went off successfully, then they asked them to leave under the control of the Bogalusa Voter League. Then this organization, interested persons in the community, said this was not right and the time was right for that Negroes shouldn't make a stand. And we, in turn, invited CORE back into Bogalusa.
Now, was this the time that Andrew Moses resigned as president of the League?
Andrew Moses immediately resigned when he found out that CORE was coming back into Bogalusa because he had received, I think, some threatening calls, and the seat was pretty hot at this time.
And that's when you became president?
No, the vice president of the organization moved up into his spot, and he sat there about 3 or 4 days, and the seat got too hot for him, and he had to move.
Who was he?
This was McCleary Sampson. Then there was it was a vacancy there, which stayed open quite some time, which was held by the Secretary of the Voters League, Mrs. Gail Jenkins, until they found a person who would take over leadership of this organization. And it was a little while after thinking over the thing that I decided that I would accept the position as president of the Voters League. Accepted this position 1 week, and the next week we was in the street with a demonstration with a march scheduled on the courthouse directed to the mayor and his council.
Yeah, well, last summer things got pretty hot, and didn't you end up negotiating with Governor McKithen a couple of times?
Yes, we had the privilege of negotiating with our honorable Governor John McKithen. We flew to Baton Rouge, to the state capitol, Mr. Hicks and myself, to converse with the governor on the Bogalusa situation. We did not reach any type of agreement. And the next night at 1 o'clock, we called him long distance, asking him to come into Bogalusa. And he immediately came into Bogalusa to see if he could negotiate with the organization. But no agreement was met because the governor wanted them to take a cool-off period, which the people in this city was absolutely opposed of.
Uh-huh. So in other words, the governor really never did do very much.
The governor, along with the mayor, haven't done anything as far as bringing about a change in Louisiana or in the parish in Louisiana, nor in the cities in Louisiana.
Uh-huh. And that's why you ended up marching to Franklinton this summer?
This was a very important reason why we had to march to Franklinton, to get the Negroes in the rural concerned about voters registration and get themselves prepared to make a change in the government in the state of Louisiana. And not only this, to destroy the fear that Negroes have out in the rural sections in the state of Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
And we thought that this march might be the answer to a lot of our problems.
Uh-huh. Yeah, could you describe the march a little bit and tell about the dog and those things?
I think that this was one of the most successful marches that I've ever witnessed. We had no major incidents, and on the route to the march to Franklin, we found a sign hanging up on a tree that said, "One Hong Young." Further, we marched up. We found a dead dog with a sign posted by him, "AZ Young, you're next." I think that the claims was trying to inject fear not only into me, but in the marchers as well. But however, we was able to march to the courthouse successfully. We made good time. Everything was timely. And we camped for a night. Two young white fellows came into the camp area and backed into my automobile. Mm-hmm. We immediately turned them over to the state troopers. And a statement made by John McKeithen stating that we are troublemakers and violent. And here we have two white people that's trying to intimidate us. And we had a chance to bring any type of pressure upon them, even bodily harm, if we desired to do so. But in the light of staying within the law, we felt that it was the best thing to do was mm-hmm. turn them over to the state troopers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was anything ever done with charges brought against them?
The state troopers handcuffed them and they carried them away from the campground. Now what happened to these fellas, I don't know. Personally, I don't believe anything happened to them, and I'm more than mm-hmm. certain that they carried them about two blocks down the road and released them.
Yeah, that's what they usually do.
Yes.
Yep. About how many people marched in Franklinton?
I think about 150 people left the city limits of Bogalusa. And after we got into Franklinton, I think that this number increased 200 or 300 people
uh-huh.
because the people in Franklinton and in the rural joined in the march. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of innocent bystanders that was concerned about what we was doing, realizing that what we were doing was absolutely right, but was afraid to take a part because of personal pressure being brought upon them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So in other words, you did get some support from the rural areas.
I think that we got a great deal of support considering the fear that Negroes have in the rural sections. And I think that this is going to bring about a big change, not only in Washington Parish, in other parishes in Louisiana. And at this time, we are holding up on the governor due to the fact that we have an election here on the 13th. And immediately after the 13th, we are going to take up what we left off with the governor. Is a plan for a march on the state capitol in Baton Rouge because the governor misrepresented the leadership of the Bogalusa Voter League. And we asked him to withdraw the statement that he made. We haven't had no response from him. And the only way that we can get it across to him what we mean and what we're advocating and what we believe in uh-huh. is to direct a march on the state capitol and let him know how we feel about Negroes, not only in Bogalusa, but in the state of Louisiana as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'd like to ask you a little bit just about your own life and how you grew up. Did you grow up in Bogalusa and go to school here?
Yes, I did.
What was it like?
Well, as a youngster, I had to work naturally and go to school. I left home with books to go to a job and work. And I left my work and went to school and left school and went back to work before returning home in the afternoon. This is how I was able to buy clothing and keep myself in line in school. The whites here were somewhat fair and to a certain extent under segregated conditions. But after being growing up in this city, and then you go away, and you see how the other half live.
Mm-hmm.
And then you begin to see that you have been handicapped. Plus, then you go into the United States Army. You serve some 3.5 years in the United States Army with 168 days on the front line in a 761st all-tank battalion.
Where was that?
This was in the European Theater of Operation under General George S. Patton in World War II. I had this type of experience where I had to participate in warfares. And I felt to believe at this point, after returning back to America, whether it be Bogalusa or New York or Los Angeles, that this same privilege executed by whites should be executed by me, because there is no more that no man can do than to risk his life for his country. And he should be entitled to the same thing, same privilege. This is where the turning point actually came in my life, where I was willing to stand up and to fight not only for myself, but for my people, wherever they be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could you describe a little bit how the Deacons got organized?
It was early in 1965 when the Bogalusa Voters League was in its struggle for freedom. When we found out that the Clintons was bringing pressure upon the Negroes and the Negro community. There were night riding, there were Negro children and women being caught on the streets, brutalized, beaten, and what have you. But we felt as though that the city police, which they did not protect us and give us the type of job that we thought that we was entitled to, we thought the only mean of counterattacking this was to form an organization by the name of the Deacons, a protective agency to protect the Negroes in their homes and in that community. And this organization began to grow and it began to fight back, because we thought that it was important that Negroes took a stand for the betterment of their people and for the betterment of their children. If the parent in the community, as Negroes, was going to continuously run, then this was a bad impression upon the children.
Yeah.
Then the children felt also that they were supposed to run and have this inferiority complex for the white man as well. But this was a good sign and a good time that Negroes stood up. And all across the world, the word deacon is known, and I think that this is having a psychological effect on a lot of young people, that Negroes should fight back because the time is right, and this is something that rightfully belongs to them by the Constitution of the United States.
What kinds of things do the deacons do, you know, like protecting people's houses at night and things like that?
Well, we usually have a continuous patrol around the Negro neighborhood in order to keep night riders from coming in to destroying homes or picking out one particular person in a family, taking them off, killing them or hanging them or whatever the condition might be. Mm-hmm. So they are not a offensive organization. This is a defensive organization.
Yeah, and most of the deacons carry guns around openly. And is that allowed under Louisiana law? Could you explain that?
I don't think it's a law for nobody to carry a gun on them as an individual.
Uh-huh.
But we do have a law in the state of Louisiana that a person can carry a gun on the seat of their car for the protection of themselves and the people who accompany them. That was at one time Governor McKeithen during our struggle issued an order to the state troopers to pick up all guns in the Bogalusa area. And we naturally bucked against this request of the governors, because we felt to believe that this was only a trick to take up the guns from the Negro and disarm us and leave the Ku Klux Klan with their guns and leave us in a terrible predicament. The newsman asked me to comment on this release that the governor had made. And I immediately commented upon this statement. And my statement to the newsmen was as this, that we as Negroes must have guns at this time to protect our homes and our families and our communities, and that we would not surrender no guns to Governor McKeithen, to his state troopers, or no one else, because we felt as though that we must protect ourselves, and if any blood flows in a direction in this city, that it would be both black and white together.
Okay, well, thank you very much.